Bristol Banter, your geeky conversational podcast. We are your hosts,
Jenny
and Rory Bristol. Join us today as we chat about cactuses for episode 3. So for our first segment, did you know? Jenny, what do you have for me today?
Did you know that the saguaro cactus's scientific name, Carnegiea gigantic, is in honor of Andrew Carnegie, because his Carnegie Institution established the Desert Botanical Laboratory in Tucson in 1903. It was founded to study how plants survive in the heat and dryness of the desert.
Oh, that's cool.
Which kind of goes full circle from our last episode.
Carnegie's pretty awesome.
I had no idea that that was the scientific name of the saguaro cactus.
I did, but I was like, I wonder if that's a thing, and I never researched it.
Well, there you go. Now you know.
So I was really surprised when we started looking at content regarding cactuses, because there's a lot of people who are just like very particular about a lot of different things with cacti, cactuses. And that is kind of my point there, is that both cacti and cactuses are correct. Lots of people are like sticks in the mud about which one is correct, and they think they know the answer. Many people think that their way is the way, but actually both are completely appropriate. And this applies to a whole lot of words that are similar, but cacti is the correct Latin plural for cactus, but cactuses is the correct English plural for cactuses. So both are absolutely correct. Although the matter can be quite divisive, depending on who you're asking.
What's the origin of the word cactus? Did you look that one up?
It is a Latin-derived English word that ends with U-S, so, like, us. And this is really common for people to find Latin words that end with U-S that we've adopted, and they think it's supposed to be I, plural, because it began as a Latin word. But it's a Latin-derived word, and it is just English.
So either one would be appropriate.
So either one's totally appropriate. But this applies to things like fungus, octopus, campuses.
Campi?
Right. There are people who say campi. And it's completely, you know, a legitimate word. It's just really awkward to say, right? And I know people who say octopi, but octopuses is just correct. Just as correct. Octopuses is just as correct. Well, also, like virus. You know, viri is correct, and some people prefer that, but viruses.
Viri is a little awkward.
Yeah. Like, a lot of Latin applications in English are just awkward and don't sound right, which is why we have English versions. Just for the record, you can find both in print in different news and scholarly articles and things like that.
Cacti and cactuses.
Mm-hmm. Cacti and cactuses. You can find them in print and in news both ways. Like, Newsday recently used cacti, and BBC recently used cactuses, where National Post recently used cacti. And it just goes back and forth depending on which reputable source you're dealing with as to how their style guide approaches those words. So I think that's kind of cool.
So it's official. Use either one.
Mm-hmm. And don't let anybody, like, word shame you. Grammar Nazis.
No word shaming.
Yeah. No grammar Nazis, for the love of God.
So when you think about the cactus, most people probably think about the saguaro, the giant saguaro cactus, which is a very iconic type of cactus. It's even on our Arizona license plate. They start very small and grow arms as they age, but they don't grow arms right away. They just start growing up into a columnar type thing. They're found exclusively in the Sonoran Desert. The Sonoran Desert itself encompasses southern Arizona and southern California, as well as northern Mexico, but the saguaro is only found in southern Arizona and western Sonora, Mexico, which is one of their states. But then they said there's a few saguaro in southeast California. The cactus needs a certain amount of water and a certain temperature, which is why they don't grow in northern Arizona where we live, because the altitude is too high and it gets cold too often, too many freezes in the winter. There are also strict laws about saguaros. It's illegal to just cut one down, for example. There are all kinds of rules when you're going to do building.
And that's because they grow from seeds and they take so long to reproduce.
Right. And one thing I read was that they're even on a list to be considered as endangered. Even though there's plenty of them, you can't just repopulate the species very quickly. It takes a really long time to...
It would take centuries to recover it if it reached that near extinction.
When I lived in Tucson when I was a kid, I remember we had a little mishap with our car one time, and it actually ran into a saguaro and knocked it over. And our car insurance had to pay for a replacement saguaro to be planted where the other one had gotten knocked down.
Oh, man.
That's how protected they are. It's kind of interesting. This cactus can live 150 to 200 years, which is much less than I thought. I thought they were centuries and centuries of...
Like the redwood of cactuses.
Right. I thought they lived for, like, you know, 500 years or something. But it's only 150 to 200 years. And it takes up to 75 years to start developing a side shoot or an arm. So the first 75 years, or maybe a little less, they won't have any arms. They'll just be straight. And then...
But they still flower, right?
I believe so. I don't know why they'd wait too long to flower. But if you see a saguaro cactus with arms, it's likely over 75 years old. So it's
pretty nuts.
Yeah. Be nice to them.
The average saguaro then is older than the average person lives.
Like, yes, definitely. So they do grow slowly, growing only a couple of inches in its first decade. So if you find a saguaro cactus on the ground that's like 2 inches tall, it might be 10 years old.
Wow.
So I guess they take a while to sort of get started, and then maybe they speed up a little.
I've actually known a couple of botanists to try to grow saguaro in other climates, in like greenhouses and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not even a chance. Like, they sprout and they die. Like, they don't even wait. They just die because it's too humid or it's too cold or they're not getting enough direct sunlight, because they have to have like 12 hours of direct sunlight.
Well,
most of the year.
This part of the country and in northern Mexico, it's, you know, a lower latitude, and so we get more sun in the winter than they do in the higher latitudes, and so they kind of need it all year round. The saguaro cactus can grow to be 40 to 60 feet tall, and when it's fully hydrated, it can weigh a couple of tons.
Whoa.
So that's a lot of water that it's holding, and it's got ribs, which are... woody ribs, plus all the fleshiness and the roots.
I mean, if you think about it, it's only 8 pounds for a gallon of water.
Yeah.
That is a lot of water held up in a cactus.
But 40 to 60 feet tall, you know, that amounts to a lot of cactus.
Yes. Oh my gosh, yes.
The one interesting thing is their roots. They're very shallow, only going 4 to 6 inches deep.
Mm-hmm.
But they radiate out as far as the cactus is tall. And the reason why they're shallow is it's easy to soak up the rainwater more easily, is they get it as soon as it starts soaking into the ground. They do have one deep taproot, though. Well, relatively deep. It goes down about 2 feet. So they have that in the middle, and then the smaller ones radiating out. Also, the saguaro cactus blossom is the state flower of Arizona.
Oh, neat.
And it's sort of iconic for the state, though it only really grows in about a third of the state. But it's... really famous, and, you know, it grows in the places where most of the people in Arizona live. Also, safety tip, the water inside a saguaro is very acidic, so don't drink it. It's not technically poisonous, but it's not good for you. So if you're lost in the desert and you need water to drink, don't drink water out of a saguaro. But the fruit is edible, the saguaro fruit.
Okay, but it's not toxic, it's just acidic.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
It's not going to... A little bit probably won't kill you, but, you know, don't take my word for it. But it wouldn't hydrate you either. It wouldn't be a good thing.
Yeah. Like drinking strong tea or just make you have to pee.
I'm not sure. In any case, don't eat the saguaros.
Yeah. Not to mention it's a felony.
Oh, yeah.
You know the fact that it's a felony, don't eat it because it'll make you sick. Okay, so my favorite cactus... in Arizona, when I first moved here, I totally fell in love with these things. They're called teddy bear cholla or jumping cholla. That's C-H-O-L-L-A.
I'm not sure why you'd fall in love with these, but I'm waiting to hear.
Oh my god, they're so freaking cute. They look like little teddy bears.
They look like the scrubby, like...
They look like, it's so fluffy, I'm gonna die. They're so cute.
I'm not a fan. I think they're kind of ugly.
Yeah, well, a lot of people do, but I think they're adorable. There's a reason they are officially titled the teddy bear cactus.
There's also a reason why they're called jumping cholla.
Yes, which I'm going to get into. So jumping cholla, or they're freaking neat creatures. They have yellow or green flowers, but when they don't have flowers, they are 100% dangerous. Just all the way around. There's no part of them that's safe to touch or approach or come too close to, because they are really reactive to even small breezes, and their pods, the arms of the cactus, are quite fragilely attached, delicately attached. So a little breeze comes by and they go whack right into whatever it was that walked by, and they are stuck there because they are covered in needles. And not like a saguaro where there's needles in every direction. These things are like millimeters apart from each other. Like hundreds of tiny little needles everywhere you look.
And aren't they kind of like curved at the end?
They're slightly barbed.
They're hard to get out.
Very hard to get out.
My sister had a very bad experience with these at a birthday party when we were kids.
They only grow in the Sonoran Desert, southern Nevada, and southeastern California. Their spines are called glochids, and they are very evil, tiny little things that they are stuck in you. If you go to YouTube, you can find all kinds of videos of people trying to do things with Choya, and they get stabbed by one, inevitably. You can't do anything near a Choya without getting stuck. So I always think it's really funny because, you know, my favorite one is these two kids go out in the desert and they have a towel and they run it really close to the cactus to show it jumping off. And it's totally a successful experiment. But then the one boy tries to get the cactus off of the towel.
Oh.
And he swings it. And he impales himself with this on the leg quite forcefully. And about half the needles just stay in his leg.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, no. Never, ever, ever. So one of the really important things to remember if you get Choya stuck to you is don't try to fling it off or flick it off or remove it with your hand. Find a stick or a wide-toothed comb. A lot of desert rats, people who spend a lot of time in the desert, carry a wide-toothed comb explicitly for the purpose of removing Choya from them without unhooking all the barbs, because you can kind of just pry the whole thing off carefully and most of the barbs will go with it, which I think is pretty neat.
Yikes.
Yeah. But there are some ways to get rid of these glochids once they have impaled themselves upon you permanently. Some of them are a little archaic and strange, but they work. My favorite way to remove these is probably school glue. It's not the most effective, but I think it's the funniest and kind of the most interesting. If you take that white Elmer's style school glue and pour it on the area, you can peel the glue off and pull the glochids with it.
Nice.
Now, this doesn't work too well for the great big spines, so which are also covered in these little glochids. So you have to take something larger and remove those, not your fingers, because then you'll get glochids in your fingers. But then you can smear this glue, you know, the regular glue, on the area and peel it off and take off some of the glochids.
Could you use tweezers for the bigger ones?
Yeah. So the most effective way to remove any of these is tweezers, bar none. Once the needles are in you, use tweezers to get them out until you can't see anymore. And then from there, you can use the school glue, or usually more effective, duct tape.
I was going to suggest duct tape.
The problem with duct tape is you're going to have to, like, rub it down to make it stick.
Oh, and that might push them further.
And it hurts. It's not a comfortable thing. So while it's the most effective, it kind of sucks. Because then you have to rip off a piece of duct tape as well. So it's like, I hope your legs are not hairy, or your hand, or wherever it got stuck, you know, because it's going to tear off some stuff. You know, if you get these on your feet or another rough area, like your elbow, you know, an area that's either calloused or just generally tough, you can actually use a pumice stone to scrape off the outer bits, and then you can just kind of scrub with the pumice stone to remove the outer layers of skin, and most of the glochids will come out, and then the rest will come out later and you'll never even feel them.
My sister got hers on her elbow, but we were kids, so she didn't really have very rough elbows yet, and she ended up with all these bumps and nastiness. She had problems, I think, for a little while afterward.
Yeah, and these glochids can become infected if not cleaned. They cause a bunch of tiny little wounds that you have to deal with. So the biggest thing you can do to avoid being hurt by a Choya is to just avoid the dang things. Because they're dangerous. And they jump. They will come after you. And it's like little Jason Voorhees cactus. they will come. They may come slowly, but they will get you. So they will, you know, you will find them attached to you. Don't ever, ever try to detach one from the cactus on purpose, for any reason, with anything, not for education, not for pleasure. There is no good reason to remove one of these, because it will end up on you, no matter what you do. You just increase your chances of being stuck so much.
You will regret it.
You will regret it. And never, ever, ever, if it gets on your arm or anything, never shake. Never try to fling it off of you, because it will end up on your face. It just seems to never fail. You will end up with this on your face, and it's like the worst pain ever. Thankfully, I've completely avoided these the entire time I've lived in Arizona, because they're adorable and cute, and I want to just go pet them, but I know better, so I don't even get out of the car. I look out through the window, and I'm like, oh, you're so cute, little cactus. And driving on.
I'm pretty sure they don't grow here in Prescott.
They do. They can.
They're probably not as common as southern Arizona.
Right. Well, they need wildlife to transport them. Humans.
Get stuck on the wildlife.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's kind of the point. The little branch, the little branches can root anywhere. So, you know, they stick to a coyote or a fox. And that fox can go miles without being able to shake it because it's so sticky. And they can't bite it off because then they get a mouthful of spines. So a lot of animals have to wait until they just literally shed off the cactus. Or they can scrape it off on something. So it's its primary mode of transportation for reproduction.
Another type of cactus that I remember from living in Tucson was the barrel cactus. They look a bit like really short saguaros, but they're a bit more squat. And most of the ones I saw were pretty short, like no more than a foot and a half or 2 feet tall at most. But they can grow a lot taller. Apparently they can grow... I don't know exactly how tall, but they can grow like as tall as a person. But generally the ones I saw were very short, unless I saw ones that were tall and I thought they were saguaro. Hard to say. But they have blossoms on the top. The tops are, they're sort of like a collection of flowers right on the very top of it. So that way it's easy to tell what it is.
Well, barrel cactus are one of the ones you can find when there's like cactus displays at botany places.
Right.
You'll find barrel cactus because they're really pretty with little flowers on top. Mm-hmm. And people go, oh, that's so pretty. And then they don't realize that the flowers are very temporary. And they just end up with a cactus.
Well, they were there a lot. But yeah. Generally, I mean, they were big round. They were, you know, a foot or a foot and a half in diameter. And just sort of squat little barrel type things. The barrel cactus is found in the desert southwest and also in northern and central Mexico. My one big memory of a barrel cactus when I was living in Tucson was some classmate of mine found one at recess or something and just sat on it, because the spikes on the barrel cactus on the very top, like around the flower area, they're actually kind of curved. And so they'll curve kind of not just like back down into itself, but somewhat curved. And so if you sit on it very carefully, you're sitting on the edge of the spine rather than the pointy bit. And I thought that was still kind of a stupid thing to do.
But he didn't get hurt?
No. He was very careful about it, but I thought, no, that's not a good idea.
Yeah, no kidding.
Another cactus that is pretty well known is the prickly pear cactus. These have teardrop-shaped paddles covered in spikes, along with tasty pink fruit that is used in everything from salad dressing to syrup to whatever you want to put it in. These grow all over the Sonoran Desert, but they also grow in the highlands, even where we live. They're somewhat pretty, but I'm not sure why people would purposely plant them, because they grow outward mostly instead of upward, and so they sort of take over an area. And it's pretty easy to accidentally run into one as you're walking past, because they just kind of expand and, you know, become big. They're native to the Americas, but they've also been introduced into other parts of the world, sometimes causing ecological damage. Somebody introduced them to New South Wales, Australia, and they caused a bunch of problems there. There are a variety of kinds of prickly pear, though, more than I can list. There were just dozens of different kinds, but they all kind of look similar and have similar-shaped paddles.
But prickly pears, they make all kinds of things from them, right? Because you've got...
The fruit.
Because you have the fruit, which they make syrups out of, and...
Candies
and jellies and things.
The very Arizona touristy purchase.
Yes, but they also sell the paddles.
Yeah, they do. I've seen them in the grocery store, but I don't know what variety of prickly pear they come from. So I can't recommend just going to your local prickly pear plant and cutting off a thing and eating it, because it may come from a particular variety. I don't know how edible all of them are. So do your research.
Yeah. And buy from a reputable produce.
Or just a...
store. Grocery store.
Regular grocery store. Mm-hmm.
So I found some interesting stuff about a bird called the cactus wren.
Which is our state bird.
Yes. And so I was like, okay, well, you know, state bird, maybe it just lives on cactus, which it totally does. But these things are vicious and hilarious. They're really mean. And I guess you really have to be if you're living in the desert as a species, because you just can't avoid the fact that you're going to have to kill other things to be able to stay alive. There's limited resources, limited habitat, limited food. So these guys are pretty nasty nest robbers. And they will attack other creatures, even non-birds. They will find other things to attack, like squirrels. They'll attack a squirrel, drive it into a cactus, and keep attacking it until it either gets away or dies on the cactus.
What do they then do with the squirrel?
They leave it. They just kill it because they're predators. They just kill it so that they have more food.
Oh, it's killing the competition. Kind of thing.
They were officially observed attacking a Yuma antelope squirrel. And then the squirrel became impaled on the thorns of a cholla, which, as we know, is just terrible. And then eventually it was able to, like, shake itself free and get to the ground, which probably took a bunch of cholla with it. Mm. And then it escaped from the birds. But talk about mean. And these guys are little meanos.
And they're not big either.
No, they're quite big. They're the largest wren in the world.
Oh, I guess I'm used to seeing them in reference to the saguaro cactus.
Yeah.
Which is what, don't they burrow in and make their homes in the saguaro cactus?
And yeah, so they also make nests on top of cholla's and any other kind of cactus because they don't care.
But the cactus is big, and so you see the bird and you're like, oh, it's a little bird, and really it's a big bird.
Yeah, it's actually quite a large bird. The stuff that I think is most funny about them, though, is that they can handle all the heat in the world. Their mating season can handle obscenely high heat. But if it gets cold in the middle of their mating season, throws off the whole mating season, and they're just screwed. I'm like, what? Because usually it's the other way around. Most animals are fine with cold weather during their mating season, and then the hot weather really puts them all off.
Messing with their mojo.
Yeah. But they're very large, and you can recognize them because they're brown with a long white eye stripe. Wrens have an eye stripe, which means that they have a stripe that begins just above their eye, like an eyebrow, but then goes down along their body or wing, kind of defining the shape of the wing often. And so they have this very distinct white eye stripe, and they have a really long tail that is black, or it has some black on it, depending on the particular bird.
How big are the birds?
The cactus wren is the largest North American wren. I think earlier I might have said the world, but it's not. That's not the case. But it is the largest North American wren. It grows up to 23 centimeters long, which is about 9.1, 9.2 inches. So if you think about that, that's a really long wren, because they're normally small enough to hold in your hand.
Okay, so it's a big wren, but it's not a big bird.
Yeah, it's not a crazy huge bird, but it's quite large for a wren. It's easily seen, which is really uncommon for wrens. Normally, wrens are really good to hide. You don't see them much, but these guys, you can definitely see. It has the regular, like, really loud pitched chirps that wrens have, but it has a white eye stripe, barred wings and tail, and its tail feathers can be spotted. It has a slightly curved bill, but what I think is kind of neat is that there's very little sexual dimorphism, so you can't just look at them and say that's a male or that's a female, because they look almost exactly the same. So I'm like, how does it work for mating season? They can tell the difference.
I'm sure their mating call has some kind of differences in them as well.
Yeah.
They know, obviously, because they keep reproducing.
Yeah.
It's not for us to know.
It's not for us to know. I think about, you know, cows look at humans, and can they tell the difference between men and women? You know? Because dogs can, and cats can, but can things like cows that are so distinctly different from us, you know?
Hard to say. Last episode's obscure awesome trivia oat question was, the Dewey Decimal System was first published in 1876 by Melville Dewey when he was just 25. Where would a book about the Dewey Decimal System end up in its own system? Give us as close a full call number as possible. The first person to send us a correct answer was Andrew, who wrote in with the answer 025.4. That's where the book on the duodecimal system would end up in its own system. Congratulations, Andrew. He would like us to draw attention to the semicolon project at thesemicolonproject.com.
It's a really interesting project, so go him.
Go him.
This week's obscure, awesome, and trivia question is regarding cactus, obviously. What is the name of the largest saguaro cactus that is currently alive? It has a name.
Like Joe or Fred or something?
Yeah. Well, it's more like guy. It's more like a title, yeah.
Okay.
And so it's a very particular one. It's the biggest we know about, and it's quite distinctly its own animal or plant, creature, individual. It's quite distinctly its own individual. It's quite remarkable, and you know, you look at it and you know which one it is. So it's kind of iconic. So what is that cactus called? What is that saguaro cactus called?
The first person to send us the correct answer to that question to bristolbanterpodcast@gmail.com will get a mention in the next podcast.
Please feel free to include a call out for your favorite charity, program, business, whatever. And
or your own we'll website.
Give it a toss out. Yeah. Shameless self-promotion is completely encouraged.
But we reserve the right to
edit out inappropriate comments. Well, that's it for today's show. As always, you can find us on the Geek Dad Podcast Network, as well as iTunes and Stitcher. If you have any topics you'd like us to cover or questions you'd like us to answer, please write us at bristolbanterpodcast@gmail.com. As always, we strive to ensure all of our information is accurate, but we are human, so if we mess up, let us know, and we will correct that information on the next episode. Tune in next time.
Bye!
This podcast has been a production of the Geek Dad Podcast Network. If you've enjoyed this content, please consider supporting us at patreon.com/geekdad.